The Shadow and the Flash by Jack London. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2011. Part 2. But things came to a head soon enough. It was at my home, after they had taken their degrees and dropped out of the world's sight, that the beginning of the end came to pass. Both were men of means, with little inclination and no necessity for professional life. My friendship and their mutual animosity were the two things that linked them in any way together. While they were very often at my place, they made it a fastidious point to avoid each other on such visits, though it was inevitable, under the circumstances, that they should come upon each other occasionally. On the day I have in recollection, Paul Tichlorne had been mooning all morning in my study over a current scientific review. This left me free to my own affairs, and I was out among my roses when Lloyd Inwood arrived. Clipping and pruning and tacking the climbers on the porch, with my mouth full of nails, and Lloyd following me about and lending a hand now and again, we fell to discussing the mythical race of invisible people, that strange and vagrant people, the traditions of which have come down to us. Lloyd warmed to the talk in his nervous, jerky fashion, and was soon interrogating the physical properties and possibilities of invisibility. A perfectly black object, he contended, would elude and defy the acutest vision. Color is a sensation, he was saying. It has no objective reality. Without light, we can see neither colors nor objects themselves. All objects are black in the dark, and in the dark it is impossible to see them. If no light strikes upon them, then no light is flung back from them to the eye, and so we have no vision evidence of their being. But we see black objects in daylight, I objected. Very true, he went on warmly, and that is because they are not perfectly black. Were they perfectly black, absolutely black, as it were, we could not see them. Aye, not in the blaze of 1,000 suns could we see them. And so I say, with the right pigments, properly compounded, an absolutely black paint could be produced which would render invisible whatever it was applied to. It would be a remarkable discovery, I said noncommittally, for the whole thing seemed too fantastic for aught but speculative purposes. Remarkable! Lloyd slapped me on the shoulder. I should say so. Why, old chap, to coat myself with such a paint would be to put the world at my feet. The secrets of kings and courts would be mine. The machinations of diplomats and politicians, the play of stock gamblers, the plans of trusts and corporations. I could keep my hand on the inner pulse of things and become the greatest power in the world. And I... He broke off shortly, then added, Well, I have begun my experiments, and I don't mind telling you that I'm right in line for it. A laugh from the doorway startled us. Paul Tichlorne was standing there, a smile of mockery on his lips. You forget, my dear Lloyd, he said.
Forget what?
You forget, Paul went on. You forget the shadow. I saw Lloyd's face drop, but he answered sneeringly,
I can carry a sunshade, you know.
Then he turned suddenly and fiercely upon him.
Look here, Paul, you'll keep out of this if you know what's good for you.
A rupture seemed imminent, but Paul laughed good-naturedly.
I wouldn't lay fingers on your dirty pigments. Succeed beyond your most sanguine expectations, yet you will always fetch up against the shadow. You can't get away from it. Now I shall go on the very opposite tack. In the very nature of my proposition, the shadow will be eliminated.
Transparency? Ejaculated Lloyd instantly.
But it can't be achieved.
Oh, no, of course not. and Paul shrugged his shoulders and strolled off down the Briar Rose path. This was the beginning of it. Both men attacked the problem with all the tremendous energy for which they were noted, and with a rancor and bitterness that made me tremble for the success of either. Each trusted me to the utmost, and in the long weeks of experimentation that followed, I was made a party to both sides, listening to their theorizings and witnessing their demonstrations. Never, by word or sign, did I convey to either the slightest hint of the other's progress, and they respected me for the seal I put upon my lips. Lloyd Inwood, after prolonged and unintermittent application, when the tension upon his mind and body became too great to bear, had a strange way of obtaining relief. He attended prize fights. It was at one of these brutal exhibitions, whither he had dragged me in order to tell his latest results, that his theory received striking confirmation. "Do you see that red-whiskered man?" he asked, pointing across the ring to the fifth tier of seats on the opposite side. "And do you see the next man to him, the one in the white hat? Well, there is quite a gap between them, is there not?" "Certainly," I answered. "They are a seat apart. The gap is the unoccupied seat." He leaned over to me and spoke seriously. "Between the red-whiskered man and the white-hatted man sits Ben Wasson. You have heard me speak of him. He is the cleverest pugilist of his weight in the country. He is also a Caribbean Negro, full-blooded, and the blackest in the United States. He has on a black overcoat, buttoned up. I saw him when he came in and took that seat. As soon as he sat down, he disappeared. Watch closely. He may smile." I was for crossing over to verify Lloyd's statement, but he restrained me. "Wait," he said. I waited and watched till the red-whiskered man turned his head as though addressing the unoccupied seat, and then, in that empty space, I saw the rolling whites of a pair of eyes and the white double crescent of two rows of teeth. And for the instant, I could make out a Negro's face. But with the passing of the smile, his visibility passed, and the chair seemed vacant as before. "Were he perfectly black, you could sit alongside him and not see him," Lloyd said. And I confess, the illustration was apt enough to make me well-nigh convinced.